All right, good morning and welcome to Trinity Church and welcome to iLife. iLife is something we do about once a quarter. Here's what iLife is. We believe that Jesus Christ came to this earth to save people from their sin and to renew all of creation. And Jesus is building His kingdom and He's making all things new. And by His work in the world, He empowers us to enjoy His good creation and to resist the temptation of making His creation a god. And so iLife is about all of life coming under the renewal of Jesus Christ. And so it's our privilege this day to think about the gift of sport. And we're going to be led today by two dear men, Coach David Bethay and Coach Blake Smith. Blake Smith is a member of this church and might not need any introduction, but I'll give him one in case. Blake's married to Megan, and they have three daughters, and he coaches women's basketball and
JV golf.
JV golf and teaches Bible over at Trinity School. So Blake and Megan are central to this church. Thanks for being here, man. And David Bethay, we're especially honored to have David. He is in his 39th year of coaching tennis over at Montgomery Academy. And in 2017, David was inducted into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame. He's an institution in this town, and his witness for Jesus is powerful and has impacted so many. David was married to Jenny for 38 years and lost her last September. And he has two sons and four grandchildren, and in July he'll have five grandchildren. So we are just honored to have both these men here. I'm going to pray, and we don't want to steal any more time from them. All right, let me pray. Lord Jesus, thank You for Your work in our world. Thank You for who You are, that You've come to save us and to save this world, and that You are making everything new. We thank You for these two men, for the gift that they are to Montgomery, for the gift that they are to their schools, and today for the gift that they are to Trinity Church. Open our hearts and our minds that we might sincerely hear from You and experience and think about this category of creation under Your lordship. We ask all of this in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right.
Well, I realize real quickly where I stand in this whole deal, because when I come in, Rob is making sure Coach Bethay is comfortable and got everything he needs, and he tells me to run get the stools for us to sit on. I'm going to open up here. I'm going to go about 15 or 20 minutes with some pretty broad ideas, and Coach Bethay is going to come up and nail us with a few things, very practical ideas about sports. But let me just begin by saying, in one sense, we'll only scratch the surface. It's a big topic, a lot of different roads you could go on, things you could talk about, but we will only touch the surface. Second, let me say this. In many ways, I hope we build what would be a big and beautiful way of living before us in terms of sports and athletics. And with that, what that means is this. In some sense, it's going to crush us. What do I mean? I mean, the law is beautiful, right? But when upheld, what does it do? It crushes us because of our inability to live up to it. So I hope in many ways what you walk away from is a reminder of our need for the gospel, the work of Christ, not only to cleanse us, but to help us move towards this greater ideal. Okay? No question, this week, I feel like as I was thinking through this, I spent more time sending text messages, apologizing to people. And yes, even referees this week who I said, I haven't loved you very well. I haven't done a good job. I think about players in different situations where I've failed to live up to the very ideals that we're talking about here. And it's a great space for the gospel to come into our lives. So just remember that. Let me say, how did God play a role in my sports growing up? Well, I was a basketball player. And I remember one story in particular at the age of 16. We've got a game that night playing our rival school, and I load up my car, I head to the school, and on the way, I pass a church. And as I pass the church, I'm like, I got a good idea. I'm going to stop and pray. So I get out and pray, right? And as I pray, you can guess what my prayers were. Lord, I want to play well tonight. And in that sense, what was God? He was, in many ways, my lucky rabbit's foot. I wanted Him to give me what it is that I wanted the most. It wasn't God that I wanted the most. What I wanted the most was to be the star. I wanted Him to exalt me in the presence of my peers, in the presence of the other team, and so I petitioned to Him to help me play well. We get there that night, the crowd's crazy, we start to warm up, you know, I'm strutting through the gym, and people start to holler my name. My name's being chanted. I'm like, God, you are honoring this request. I hear from the back and from this side, and all of a sudden, after about three rounds of layups, my girlfriend comes out who's captain of the cheerleaders, and I'm like, even she wants to be a part of this. And as she walks out and comes up, and I'm like, yeah, baby, what you need? And she says, you have a piece of toilet paper hanging from your shoe. I had a piece of toilet paper this long streaming from the back of me as I warmed up. People weren't hollering my name in stardom. They were hollering my name to tell me to pay attention to what I had on the bottom of my foot. Needless to say, God was showing me in many ways, and really ever since then, I've pondered this idea. What's the role of God in sports? Couple of things. Let me just start by saying this. This really begins in the idea of what we would call the cultural mandate. If we go back to Genesis and we think about creation and we think about why God created humanity, it's essential that we understand one of the significant reasons that He made us. But before we do that, I want to read to you, many of you are probably familiar with the movie Chariots of Fire. Maybe more familiar than me. I know Patrick loves it. He references it quite a bit. I want to read to you a critique on Chariots of Fire. The story is mainly about these two runners. I think they run the 100 meters and the 400 meters. And there's a guy, and I practice saying this name a million times, but I know I'm not going to say it right. But this critique is by a guy named Dominique Erdozane. And this is what Dominique says about Chariots of Fire. He says, there are three distinct positions that offer an important nuance to how we participate in sports. And we see these nuances in the movie Chariots of Fire. For Jenny, Jenny is a guy named Eric Liddell's sister. Eric Liddell is one of the runners in the movie. And to this devout sister, an hour spent sporting is an hour spent not praying. Sports are just games to Jenny. Frivolous, passing time, with no redeeming purpose. In contrast, another runner, Harold Abrahams, a Jewish student at Cambridge University, admits to his girlfriend, and this is good, that he does not just love running. He's addicted to it. He says, 4 feet wide, I have 4 feet wide, talking about the lanes on a track, with 10 lonely seconds to justify my whole existence. For Harold Abrahams, the game is everything. It's the place he goes for value, for worth. It determines his value to the world. But for Eric Liddell, the game is a tool. He says, I find in sports a method of evangelism, a special means to glorify God. As Liddell says to his sister, it is not just fun, but for me to participate honors Him. So how does sport honor the Father? In a broad sense, how does it honor the Father? How is it a glorious thing? Not how can I necessarily, and hopefully we'll get to this, not just how can I use it to glorify God, but how in and of itself is it glorious? Is it beautiful? And I want to present to you two very distinct ways. Number one, one aspect of humanity is to enjoy God's good creation. When He placed Adam and Eve in the garden, He gave them one thing to not do. He said, don't eat of the tree. But He didn't say, don't play in the tree. He didn't say, don't build tree houses. He said, don't eat of it. But Adam and Eve are called in many ways to enjoy the wonder of God's world. To enjoy God's world is pleasing to the Father. When I eat, I can eat to His glory. When I see scenery, I can see to His glory. Well, how do we do that through sport? I would say this. To have fun in a playful way with sport is glorious to God. Let me give you an example. Several weeks ago, we were at my mother and father-in-law's house in Mississippi. And it was late in the evening, and I noticed a tennis racket and a tennis ball in the garage. And so I get the tennis ball out, and I get the tennis racket out, and go into the backyard. And before we know it, there's all of us, however many that was, let's say 10 of us, in the backyard. And one person's hitting, and we're tossing the ball, and someone's hitting it, and everybody's chasing it and throwing it back up. Look, we weren't looking to perfect our hitting skills. We weren't looking, although me as a father, I do in that moment work on throwing a little bit. We weren't working to be the fastest thrower. What were we doing? We were participating in the goodness of our benevolent, loving Father in playing a simple thing called game. And in doing so, we were enjoying our Creator in what He has made. I would say this. In one sense, everybody in here has the capacity to do that. To move. We were made to move. We were made to enjoy. And an aspect of that is moving out into the creative genius of God's creation and taking these things called games and playing them. Is it croquet? I had a aunt who was suffered with disabilities all of her life. And she lived with us growing up. And one thing she could do, there's a lot of things she could do well, but one thing athletically that she could do very well was throw a football. It was quite amazing how well she could throw a football. So at the age of 8, I can remember knocking on her bedroom door saying, "Will you come out and throw the football with me?" And we would go out, and I would jump on the trampoline, and for hours she would take that football and act like she was Joe Namath. And I would act like I was Lynn Swan or someone, and I would dive and catch the ball, and we would laugh and enjoy the community of one another, the wonder of God's creation, and the goodness of sport. Just for fun. And God is honored by that. By the camaraderie of the family, by the goodness of His world, and by joyful play, using our eyes and our hands. God is a good, good Father who has given us many things to do in this world, but one would be to enjoy His creation, and I would say through the use of sport. So that in one sense is how sports is glorious, but let me give you another sense. And in this sense, I think it takes on a little deeper meaning. God called Adam and Eve in the garden to be fruitful and multiply, to subdue the earth, to fill it, to work it. And in that way, God made us creators. He called us into this world and said, take the raw materials of this world and go forth and create. Create what? Create beauty. Create harmony. Create order. Now let me pause for a second and give you a quick example. I'm a girls basketball coach at Trinity. And this is no offense to women. I love girls basketball. And when girls come to us in the seventh grade to play basketball, many of which in the past who are touching a basketball for the first time. So in the sixth grade, they're coming in to try out. It at that point is not beautiful and harmonious and orderly. Okay. If I were to take the ball and toss it out and say, go play, there's not a lot of order to that. It's pretty chaotic. And one of my goals is to look at that and say this. How can we move from the chaos of what's going on and produce in our mind something glorious? How can we move from disorder to order? How can we move from messiness to beauty? And in that sense, we are living out our calling as God's image bearers in this world to subdue the world. Some do it through art. Some do it through architecture. Many ways we do that, but a specific way, a specific application to that reality is the idea of sport in creating something that's glorious. And that in and of itself is honoring to the Father. When someone takes a skill and works to create beauty in that skill, it is following the very image of the Creator Himself. We are His co-creators in this world. It's very interesting. So what does that mean? Well, when my daughter is working on her basketball jump shot, if there's no one else in the gym, and as she grinds and works to correct her form and make it beautiful, if no one ever watches that, if no one ever sees it but her and the Father, that's glorious. It's majestic. You know, the irony is this. Before humanity was even created, God's creation was glorious. It was beautiful. He needed no one else to see the display of His wonder. And in that sense, for me to perfect a craft in the presence of my Maker is good. Now, interestingly enough, God didn't just make a creation and leave it there alone. What did He do? He made humanity. And He placed humanity there to take part in it. In other words, He made spectators. He made people to look out and take in the glory of the work that He accomplished. In many ways, every one of us in here are either, we're creators at times, and we're also spectators at times. Some of us create. Look, I know there are athletes in here. You are creating. You were made in the very image of your God, and it is noble for you to say, I will work to this end. Let me say this. Pam McLemore and I told her I'd give her a shout out. Pam McLemore's kids will come up to the gym sometimes. Pam, can I say this uninhibitedly? Pam's kids will come up to the gym and she'll say, hey, did y'all have fun? Okay? And I'll say, no, did you work? And she'll say, no, did y'all have fun? And I'll say, no, did you work? And the point that I'm trying to make, and she's trying, let me say this, we're both right in a sense, right? We're both right. But let me say, we need to do away with the connotation that work is a bad thing. In a sense, work has a deeper significance to who I am. It's rewarding. It's fulfilling. So when an athlete is grinding to try to produce something glorious, would you say that's fun? Well, I don't know that I would use that word. There's a place for that in playfulness and athletics. There's a place for that. But when we're talking about creating glory, it takes effort, and that effort is difficult at times. But it's glorious. Look, not only is it glorious, not only is it difficult, but think about after the fall. I mean, what was cursed on humanity after the fall? Many things, but work was cursed. You will work the ground and it will produce for you thorns and thistles. In other words, it's going to be difficult to create beauty in this broken world. It's going to be hard. It is hard to create beauty. And so in many ways, we honor the Father when through this venue of sport, we work to create something glorious. Not only for the Father to enjoy, but for the spectators to enjoy. Now I'm going to try to hurry up because I need to get him up here. But let me say this. You know, it's interesting because definitely in our society, we have a tendency to not worship the creator of that individual, but to worship the individual himself. You understand what I'm saying? We worship LeBron. You know, we worship the star. When in reality, the star should be pointing us to the glory of the greatest star, the one with the true creative genius, the one who, with the mastermind, created humanity to be able to move in such a way to create such beauty. So in that sense, it is to honor God to take in the beauty of the performance of athletes. I can see the wonder of God in that. Let me say another thing here real quick. Another extension of the cultural mandate is this very idea, because we live in a broken world, that there is both physical brokenness and spiritual brokenness. And I would say this, that sports provide a unique opportunity to break down barriers, to engage in the physical and spiritual brokenness of our world. Does that make sense? It helps. It's a language that connects societies, a language that connects cultures, a language that connects us with people that are different than us. Look, my children, and I assume this is all right to say, my children can now go into the presence of schools and other individuals that they don't have a lot in common with. They can do that. And sports has been a venue to create that. And through that, we can then engage the brokenness in this world. And we can use our skills that God has given us in such a way that not only in and of itself creates beauty, but helps take what is broken in this world and redeem it to the glory of the Lord. Here's my prayer, okay? And yes, I'm making reference to my children, but here's my prayer for my children. Maybe here's a little side note for you. I want my children to grow up thinking of ways to create beauty in this world. How can you work to create beauty? I don't care what that is. It can be basketball. It could be instruments. I don't care what it is. What are you doing with your God-given creative genius to work and to work well to create glory in this world? And I'm going to help hold you to that. And number two, how are we and you going to use that to help engage the brokenness in this world? How are we going to do that? Now, with all that said, very much ideals. Play is for fun. It's work to create glory. And I would even say to you, again, as a small side note here, that if you're, you know, when you start thinking about high school athletics, so on and so forth, and even junior high at times, and, you know, what do I do? My kid wants to have fun. Is it fun or is it work? If someone just wants to have fun, and someone just wants to enjoy the sport, then you need to consider the venues that you're trying to involve your child in to do that. You know, where should that take place in society? I'm not sure. I don't have the answer to that. I know here's one of the major problems. The fun is becoming more work earlier and earlier on. And I think we need to work to push that back. I think we do. In many ways, I failed at that with my children. I don't know that I pushed it back. I probably sped up the process. But there's a sense where we need to have fun, not for the sake of perfecting it, but for the sake of enjoyment. But we do have to wrestle with, when does that occur? When does that transition take place? Does it take place in junior high, high school? I don't have the answer for that, but it's something to contemplate. With all that said, the glory of sports, we do live in a society that worships it. Sports has massive amount of power. Like sex, money, politics, the academy, and so much else in life, sport can be used in a life-enhancing, God-honoring way, or abused and misused in ways that corrupt its noble purpose. This statement affirms caution and calls for Christians accountability in one of the most powerful forces in culture today. Let me read one more quote. This is by Friedrich Nietzsche. He follows up his famous God is dead declaration with this question. Y'all, this is very haunting. If God is dead, how shall we comfort ourselves? What festivals of atonement, what sacred games shall we have to invent? Sean Kelly, a top-tier philosopher from UC Berkeley and Harvard, claimed that living in the secular age means admitting that there are no deep and hidden truths to the universe, much less revealed truth. But that does not mean we have to live in despair, especially when we have sports. According to Kelly, sports may be a place in contemporary life where Americans find sacred community most easily. There is no essential difference, they write, in how it feels to rise as one in joy to sing the praises of an invented God or to rise as one in joy to sing the praises of a Hail Mary pass. That is not to say something so overpowering happens that it wells up before you as palpable presence and carries you along as a powerful wave. That is the moment when the sacred shines. Sports holds an honored place in the modern pantheon of American deities. Something that can be so glorious can be so worshipped. And I'm such a good friend to Coach Bethea, I'm going to let him hit us between the eyes with a hard serve on what it looks like to worship this invented deity of athleticism. Y'all give a warm welcome to Coach Bethea.
Thanks, Blake. I'm gonna move some of this stuff back because I'm afraid I'm gonna knock it over, and or either fall off up there. It's good to be with you this morning. I want to get one thing straight before I talk, because I probably need a big mirror back there for me to look at myself. So a lot of things I say, I need to think about myself all the time as well. One of the things I do almost every morning is look at myself in the mirror and say, are you being the person you need to be? Because you can't lie to yourself when you look in the mirror. And so I feel like I need something to look at as I talk, because these things I need to hear myself. Let me say right off, I'm a competitive person. I coach middle school football. I want my guys to win every game we play. I coach tennis. I want my guys to win the state championship every year. I'm competitive. I tell you how competitive I am. My family and I are running in this, it's a run walk to raise money for pancreatic cancer, which caused my wife to step into heaven a little earlier than what we wanted her to. But we have this team, and we're trying to raise money for research for pancreatic cancer. It's one of the most deadly cancers you can get, and it's really underfunded in research. In the last few months of my wife's life, nothing was working, so basically she just let them research on her. And so on their website for this, it's called Purple Stride. We're running it in Birmingham in a couple weeks. They have teams, and they keep a top 10 list, you know? Well, I saw that. I'm like, hey, man, I want to raise more money than anybody. I want to be first, you know? I mean, I'm competitive. I want to win this thing, you know? And a couple days ago, we were in first. We were doing good, you know? I was feeling good. All right, everybody on my team, on my family, like, hey, man, this is great. Well, then about 2 days ago, somebody drops $20,000 on this other team, and they go straight to the top. Now we're in second. I'm like, that's a good thing, right? Okay? But my first thought was, are you kidding me? I want to catch these guys. You know, I don't know who they are, but I want to overtake them. So I'm competitive. When I come at you like that, some things that really helped me over the years growing up, I have like two of the best brothers you could ever imagine. One of them's sitting right back there. Y'all know Tim. It's kind of a weird thing. I coach at Montgomery Academy. He coaches Trinity, and we love each other, you know? But like, I've learned so much from him. My older brother was a great athlete. For a while, I was Terry's younger brother. When I got to the point where I was really able to come into myself, I became Tim's older brother. So he's great, man. I've learned so much from sport from him. And learned so much from one of the students we had years ago, about 5 years ago. She would walk through the gym, and I'd say, how'd your games go? And some of her answers just really, I realized she gets this thing a whole lot better than I do. And about that time, I heard a sermon from David Platt. I don't know if y'all ever listened to David Platt, but he's incredible. And it really changed my view of how I should view what happens with sport and how I treat it. And David Platt, in one of his sermons, a lot of things I talk about today come from David Platt, but in one of his sermons, he gave an illustration about somebody coming to America that had no idea about church, about sports, about any of this stuff. But they wanted to find out. And so I'm going to kind of put myself in to be that person that David Platt talked about in that sermon. And he said this guy came, and the first place he went was church. Let's just say Montgomery, Alabama. Finds a big church to go to. And comes in, and he said, you know, most people, they were kind of getting there late. They came in, and it seemed like on the outside of the big sanctuary, most people were talking, were excited about stuff, you know. But as they came in, they sat down in the sanctuary, they almost seemed kind of groggy, you know. And so many people were not even on time. They were coming in late to the service. I know that doesn't happen here. I go to a Baptist church. It always happens there. Okay? They're coming in late. And he said, as I noticed, hardly anybody's talking to me. You know, nobody really said much to me. Because, I mean, nobody knew me. But I noticed when the preacher was talking, most people sat there kind of expressionless. Seemed like they were a little emotionless as he was talking, even as they were singing. It's kind of blank looks on their faces. And he said after a while, people got kind of fidgety. Started looking at their watches and stuff like that. And then when it was over, everybody got up pretty fast and they left. And as I walked out, everybody would stop outside and they were talking. And they were talking about something that happened yesterday. Because this was in the fall. And everybody was excited about that. And they kept talking about it. And I figured, I wonder what happened yesterday. Because it must have been pretty exciting. Because nobody was talking about what happened just now, what that preacher just said. Everybody was talking about what happened yesterday. So, this person decided, hey, I'm going to use some notes to keep me on track, okay? I'm going to go next Saturday to what they're talking about, you know? And so that next Saturday, all ready to go, you know, some people were driving like a couple hours west. Some people were driving like an hour or so east. But here's the thing. Everybody got there like 3 hours early. You know? And everybody's happy. They're talking. Like, if they don't know somebody walking by, they say, hey, come on. I mean, we got plenty of food right here to eat. Especially if they had a particular color of clothing on. And it's like, everybody was happy. They're hugging people they didn't even know. And then everybody starts going into this stadium. And they're kind of in a hurry because nobody wants to be late. Nobody wants to be late getting to whatever it is they're fixing to do. So they get in there and he said, like, when it starts, people are like going crazy. They're yelling, they're applauding. When something apparently good happens, they go around and they like slap hands with people they don't even know. They're hugging people they don't even know. And he said some people like even start losing their voices because they're so excited with what they're seeing down there on the field. These people running around. He said, you know, that's a whole lot more emotion than what I saw last Sunday. Here's the thing. After it got going, nobody's looking at their watches. In fact, if they go into this thing called overtime, everybody's even more excited. And when it was over, the celebration just began. Now, I tell you, that person that came and they looked at both places, what would they think is most important? Well, that's a hard question for us to answer. Because we're all in that boat, myself included. We're all in that. We get so excited about a particular sport. And then we come to church sometime, and we're just kind of emotionless. You know? All of us are guilty of that. So I came through, I looked at, in David Platt's sermon, he talked some more, and I kind of added some things to it, but I kind of gave us like this personal evaluation. You know, let's examine ourselves right now. And I ask you like, to be honest with yourself. You don't have to answer, raise hands, all that kind of stuff. But just kind of be honest with yourself with these questions. The first thing I think we have to do in our relationship with sport and God and Christ and our feelings. And, it, you know, we could tab in music instead of sport. We can work instead of sport. But since we're talking about sport today, that's a topic, we'll use that. But let's examine ourselves a little bit. A couple questions right here. First thing you need to examine is your heart. Because God says, it says in the Bible, to love God, love Jesus with all our heart. But it's like, think about where is, when I say you're, I'm talking about myself too. Where is your life centered? Where is it centered? Look at your emotions, your thoughts, your passions. Where do those go? Those tell us where we're centered. Do they go toward your son or daughter's team? Or the team that you're playing on? Or your favorite college or sports team? Is that where those emotions, is that where you're most passionate? Is that where it comes out the most? Or does it come out when you're talking about your love for God or your service to other people or how you help other people? We honestly have to examine that in ourselves. We have to examine our mind a little bit, because what are we preoccupied with? You know, it's like what's important to you is where your mind goes when you don't have anything else to do. You know, where does our mind go when we have no other task, we have nothing to do? You know, does it go like, hey, I'm just going to turn on ESPN? I'm just going to think about this. You know, what is it? Where do we go to? And there's some practical ways to really examine ourselves. Is first of all, like to examine our conversation. What do we talk about the most? Now, when we call our friends and stuff, you know, I mean, we talk about our sons and daughters' last game, what the coach did, what he shouldn't have done. We talk about the college team, how to fix it, who they recruited, all that sort of thing. I don't know, have you ever called somebody and talked about, hey man, remember that time like Paul was in a jail cell and the earthquake came? And like, should he have like gone off, took that jailer off somewhere and maybe had a chance to show everybody what happened? Or was he right staying there just with that jailer and going home with him and helping just that one family? I've never called and talked about that. Examine our conversations. What kind of conversations are we having? What's the most important thing we talk about? Examine your emotions. Okay, here's the thing. Church I used to go to years ago, could always tell who was, during the fall, who was going to be there that Sunday. Okay? If Auburn lost, this group wasn't coming. They weren't going to be at church that next day. If Alabama lost, that group wasn't going to be there. It was like clockwork. But how do our emotions with sport cause us to go forward? Like, here's what I like to do sometimes. Sometimes I don't coach varsity football or varsity basketball, but I love to go to the games. And I stand on the sideline sometimes. I stand like the front row of the bleachers in basketball. And like, sometimes I just want to like get my phone out and film what goes on in those stands. And like what people say and like their emotions. And then like a couple days later, call up a couple people and say, hey man, just meet me. I just want to show you the way you looked in that stand. Like your face gets red, like especially against referees. I mean, like, how can we let our emotions get so out of hand? It's quite amazing. Let's examine our money. How much money we spend on, like, and please know, I'm talking to myself too. Because I fall down on so many of these things. I mean, where do we spend our money? Like season tickets? Club volleyball? Travel baseball? How much money do we spend on all that as opposed to how much money we spend on giving to our church, helping people in need? That tells us where our heart is. Because where it says, what does it say in the Bible? Where your treasure is, there's where your heart is. Examine our use of time. The amount of time we spend watching sports, talking about sports, it's unbelievable. It's on 24 hours a day on TV. You know? 24 hours a day. How much time do we actually spend going to games, thinking about games, watching games, as opposed to how much time we spend serving other people. It's quite amazing, the difference. And the other thing would be to examine our perspective. Then do we care more about whether our team wins and loses than we care about our whole generation that's getting attacked by secularism, that social media and the internet, everything else is just blowing up our kids' minds? We care more about fixing our college, our favorite college team, than we do fixing that. I mean, we're all kind of guilty of that. Yeah, I mean, do we worry about fixing a college football team more than we talk about fixing people that are broken and really need Jesus? What's our perspective on that? And those questions right there, they just really touched me. You know, because I fall down on so many of those things. Especially my use of time, my use of money. And it really convicts me. I think that's why we have to go back and we have to look at these things. You know? So, broke down some things from all different sermons I've heard, people I've heard, that I think would be interesting for us to hear. And those would be like, how can we glorify God through sports? How can we do that? Well, one thing we do is use sports to call attention to God's greatness. I have an example in the national championship football game. Okay? One quarterback that's just been incredible gets pulled out, another quarterback comes in. And they kept showing Jalen Hurts on the sideline. I mean, the way TV is, they're probably hoping to get him in a bad time. But you watch this guy. And he was right there cheering for his teammate. He was right there engaged, even though he wasn't playing. And the guy's been like, what, 28-2 as a starter or something like that. You can see right there, there's probably something different about this guy. There's something different about him. And then after the game, of course, you heard Jalen Hurts and Tua, I can't pronounce his last name, okay? You heard them talk about, the first thing they talked about was their love of Jesus. And that's where they draw their strength from. And they called attention to God's greatness. And you know what this? To me, like Jalen Hurts called attention to God's greatness by his attitude and his actions. Incredible. I tell you this, like, the thing that happened to me that made me realize how important sport was to people, how you can draw attention to God, but just in the way their actions and stuff. This guy used to coach Lewis Gate, Sweet Lou. Okay? Great basketball player. I mean, got the honor to have his son now. And like, one day my son's 34 now, but when he was like 6, he was in the family room. We had a little basketball goal there he could shoot. And he came out one day and he was wearing socks a really weird way. I'm like, Chris, dude, what's up with the socks? He said, Dad, it's the way Lewis Gayden wears his socks. It's the way Lewis Gayden wears his socks. Man, if my son is watching the way Lewis Gayden wears his socks, imagine the effect that all these other pro athletes have on him. The chance we have to show God's greatness. And a lot of you guys and girls in here that play like, in your middle school team or your high school team, and you think like, nah, nobody sees me. Man, people watch. If my son, when he's 6 years old, knew how Lewis Gayden wore his socks, imagine what the kids at your school watch you do when you're on the court or you're on the field. They know exactly what you do, and they try to emulate that. And what a chance for us, for you as young athletes, to show God's greatness on the court or on the field. It has a huge effect. And we just got to, you know, like I said, keep things in proper perspective too. I mean, like, here's the thing. When church and sport collide, who wins? Like on a Sunday, when church and sport collide, who wins? Now, I'm going to tell you something. I'm guilty of letting sport win sometimes. Because like my son played tennis. A lot of times we'd go to tournaments and he'd keep winning. And they play on Sunday. And we'd stay Sunday and play. But like every single... And that happens sometimes. I'm not saying that's wrong. But every single Sunday, if sport and church collide, who wins? Okay? Because we're setting a big example for our children. If sport always wins. And we can use sport to show appreciation to God. Golly, He gives so many good gifts to us. Athletic ability is such a great gift. Abilities in music are, all that. But we're talking about sport. So we have a chance to give back, to be grateful to God for these abilities that He's given us by the way that we act and the way that we talk on the court and off the court. We have such a great chance to show thankfulness to God. Now, also, we can use sports to grow in sanctification, to grow in godliness. Sport, godliness, that doesn't seem to go together too well, but really it does. You think about humility. Not letting things go to our head, but realizing the gifts God gave us are for us to use and to help others get closer to Him. To honor people. Yes, I mean, to honor officials by the things that we say to them. The things that we yell at them in the, out of the bleachers and stuff. Because, I mean, look, here's the thing. Talked a while ago to you students, like, if my son watches how Lewis Gayden wears his socks, they watch you. Well, in those stands, I guarantee you, parents, the things you yell out, people hear. And it's such a witness. It's just the type of witness we want to have. Self-discipline. Sport helps us so much in self-discipline. You know, Paul says, discipline yourself spiritually the way that athletes discipline themselves physically. I mean, he saw what athletes were doing even back that time. He said, that's the way we ought to discipline ourselves spiritually. And I like this, self-sacrifice. Teaches us self-sacrifice. Because like sometimes we need to ask, and you young athletes this too, like, how can I best serve this team I'm on? Question rarely gets asked in these days, does it? I mean, we don't hear that much. It's mainly about how can I be better? I mean, how can I score the most points or whatever? But how can I best serve the team that I'm on? That's such a way to grow in godliness, because that's what we're supposed to be, as servants, right? And the last thing is we can use sports to lead others to God and to lead others to Jesus. I wonder how many people started exploring Jesus because of what those two quarterbacks from Alabama said after the national champ. How many people started, who is this guy? We may not ever know that. And I'm not talking about like, after a game, you know, yeah, all praise goes to God, and then you drop a few curse words later on that just, you know, messes up everything you just said. I'm talking about people that truly use their abilities and their sport to show God and to bring other people to God. It's a great vehicle for that. And here's the thing, you know, we ought to always give 100% to what we do. You athletes, you should give 100% to try as hard as you can, because God blessed you with those gifts. Just because you're trying to point people to God with your abilities, that doesn't mean He doesn't want us to use them the best we possibly can. I think He does. But He wants us to keep them all in perspective. All that we do on the field, in the stands, as we're coaching, all those things point people to the Lord or away from the Lord. It's just the way it is. If we call ourselves believers, we call ourselves followers of Jesus, everything we do points us one way or the other. So I hope we will keep our perspectives, and I hope we'll use sport and to glorify God and realize that I think God loves sport. He just wants us to use it in the right way. Anything?
Do we have some good questions?
Yeah, I'm going to ask a question. I'm hidden somewhere. You have to find me. It's like, where's Waldo? It's a fun little game. No, I'm right here. But I got three questions. They're all for the panel.
Blake's going to take all the hard ones, okay?
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. Well, the first one's actually from something Blake said, so this we'll just say this is for Blake. You talked about the glory of honing your craft even when no one is watching. Does that kind of glory of honing your craft extend to other activities? Or is it just for sports? Could someone who wanted to become a great Monopoly player, or a bridge player, or a video game player, say the same thing about the time they spend doing that? Why or why not?
I think so. Let me put a clause in there. I think time is an issue in all of this. In other words, am I going to spend... Yeah, I think you have to wrestle with what's the legitimate amount of time do I spend in doing something like this. But I think there is something to say about, you know, I'm wrestling with what's the difference in Monopoly or what was the other example?
It's card, any kind of game. So the games listed are board games, card games, video games.
Yeah. What's the difference in that and an instrument? I don't know that I can fully answer that right now. My initial gut reaction is there is a difference, but I don't know that I could articulate what it is. I don't have a good answer for that.
All right, the next one's kind of long because it came from Bart Harmon, so.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
It's kind of freaking me out. I don't know where you are.
I'm right here. Hey, I'm right here. All right.
I'd already spotted him. But hey, you didn't know, like, Jesus spoke to us here?
Yeah. This is the way Presbyterianism works. Okay. It's kind of long. I'm going to try to summarize as best I can. I'm going to have to scroll. That's how long it is. Here we go. You referenced Chariots of Fire and Eric Liddell and the fact that he refused to run a race that he had trained for years to run because it was scheduled on the Sabbath. So he stood up to his king, his country, his coach, and his team, and he said no. And then you look at today, for us and our kids, what do we say to coaches and teams who schedule practices and games on Sundays? And what should we say to the coach who says, sure, you can go to camp or to RYM or to on a mission trip for a week, and that's fine, but your starting position might not be here when you come back?
Well, something jumps in my mind. Do you want to speak to that first?
Go first.
Well, the first thing that I would want to say to my kid is, you may lose your starting position for saying yes to Jesus in some way. I mean, I don't know that I would say anything to the coach necessarily. I mean, I think at the end of the day, to follow Christ is you're going to suffer a diminished life in some way, and whether it's a job advancement or whatever. So I don't know that in that sense I'm willing to necessarily fight the coach or whoever on that. What was the rest of the question?
No, I think that was a great answer. But it's what do you say to coaches? And what about scheduling practices and games on Sundays?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, in between church and stuff, I think it's I kind of like to get together with people, my friends and stuff, and maybe hit some tennis balls. I would never make it mandatory because a lot of times Sundays families like to spend that time. I think if you're not missing church, this is me, and if you disagree, I understand, I respect that. I really don't see anything wrong with the afternoons doing that. To speak with what you said about going to a camp or something, losing your starting position or whatever, I remember my son played basketball at Montgomery Academy, and Anthony McCall was his coach. Mark wanted to go on a choir tour. He was going to miss huge team camp. And Anthony let him miss. And Mark got to witness to these two young men, and they actually came to be believers. And one thing Anthony talked to Mark about was, wow, isn't that great? If you'd have stayed here, maybe those two young men never get to know the Lord. So there's value in having a coach that's a believer that believes that way.
And I would second that aspect of it, that there is value in that. But of course, you know, I think we face the reality that we don't live in an ideal world, and you know, how are we going to do that? There was something else that was said that I wanted to allude to there, but I can't remember.
Well, the next question kind of builds off that. You're all just like walked right into it, so that's good. I don't know why people are laughing.
Oh, wait, Kurt, let me say.
No, go ahead.
I think the whole practicing and things on Sunday, I think a great way to kind of articulate that in my mind is to go back to what we originally said. I mean, there's a fun play and there's a work play. A work play is actually working hard to perfect the craft, and there's a fun play that's just for enjoyment, and I think that is extremely appropriate on the Sabbath. And you know, then you move into the work play, and then I think you've got some more discrepancies there you have to wrestle with in your view of the Sabbath and so on and so forth. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't totally. I'm trying to parse this question out. I think this person is smarter than me, so just help me. Just bear with me here. Can your environments, like a Christian or a non-Christian, aid or hinder your ability to minister to your players, especially those who might be of another religion?
Can you read it again?
I've only read it about four times before I said it out loud. All right, here we go. I think what they're asking is how do you apply your Christianity as a coach, how does it affect the way that you coach your players, and how might it affect the way that you coach players who don't share your convictions?
I don't talk about Jesus individually. I mean, as a group, unless I have a certain player who needs some help and some talk to, and I'll talk about his relationship with the Lord. If he doesn't want to go there, I'm surely not going to push it. But I kind of feel like in that regard, it's your actions, the way you live your life, and what they see in you speaks maybe more than everything you actually say. If that makes sense.
Well, I think I'm, you know, in maybe a little different situation, and I think, we are trying to, I mean, I'm trying to be sensitive in how I say this, but I try to connect everything, you know, to the glory of God. And, you know, it's interesting because I think what that would mean for me in my setting is that should really mean that we work harder than anyone. Like, with the players on my team, we should work harder than anyone. I don't care if you don't play a minute. I don't care if you play or the superstar. There's a very high expectation of loving your neighbor and working as unto the Lord. But anyway.
All right, last one. This is just from me. Okay, so this is not...
I got one thing I want to say real quick, so hurry.
All right, it's a quick one.
I've always wanted to boss you around.
That's, well, get in line. You guys, your livelihood is coaching. It's what you do. It's your calling. I think it's a calling just like any, like the calling to be a minister or the calling to be a plumber or whatever. Like, it's God calls people to do things, right? So you guys are like big fans of sport. You have to be, right? I mean, it's what you do. So would you say that being a coach makes it harder to not idolize sports than maybe some of the parents of your players or your players themselves? Or because you're a coach, do you have like a better perspective on that? Well, just walk us through that, I guess, is my question.
Well, I'll speak first, don't you? I don't. I honestly don't feel like I'm called to be a coach. I feel like it's like I think God just called me to be an influencer of people. I happen to be a coach. I don't. Like a lot of people come during football season, like, hey, coach, did you watch that game on TV? I'm like, no, I didn't watch any football this weekend. I like sports. I like football. I like it all, but I feel like my role is to influence people to the Lord.
You know, for me, just to try to answer this very quickly, if you think about what are one of the reasons or the different reasons you worship something, many things we could say there, but or idolize it. One would be that particular thing aids in covering my shame. In other words, it makes me feel as if I'm worth something. Does coaching make me feel as if I'm worth something? Absolutely. When we lose, am I worried about what everybody in here thinks of me? Yes. Do I live in bondage to that? Yes. Do I want Jesus to heal me of that so I can do my craft in a more glorious way? Yes. But I'm always fighting that balance. I'm always fighting wondering what others are thinking and how others feel. And by the way, the players are too, which is good for everybody to remember, by the way, because we're all struggling with some sense of shame. And with that, our performance is one of the chief ways we run to. And our kids hear what we celebrate. If I were to grow up thinking that my kids don't think I love them more when they hit a jump shot, then I'm deceiving myself. Because they've seen me celebrate jump shots. And I've got to work to show them that there's a greater significance to who they are than how they perform on an athletic field. We could talk about that a long time. Another thing, I'm going to say this real quickly and I'm done, Rob. Because I know it's time to go. But, you know, so much of this too, Trinity, just let me speak to you for just a second. Love you guys. This is pretty bold. I've been thinking about it all week. Y'all, I run circles with a lot of different people. And we of all people need to love refs and coaches and other teams. And I'm just saying this to you out of love. Jesus calls us to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. And there's nothing that justifies backbiting, sitting in the stands talking about people. Nothing. And we of all people shouldn't engage in it. There's grace for us there. But I just want to encourage you with that in as loving way as I can. I would love to hear the people I rub shoulders with to say, you know, that Trinity group, man, they're different. They treat us much differently than other people do. I feel safe with them. And I would say, do people feel safe with you? Do they feel safe that what they're seeing in their face is what they're getting behind their back? So just hear that, and I bathe that in the gospel. Rob?
Let me pray. We got to go. Thank you guys so much. Let me pray. Lord, thank you for these men, for their time, for their willingness to talk about. It's a complicated issue, Lord. And we thank you for sports, and we thank you for all the good gifts. We know that all good gifts descend from the Father of lights. I pray that you would write your word on our hearts, that you would convict us of our sin, but you would not just leave us in conviction, Lord, but that you would point us to Christ and that you would redeem us. Lord, I pray for the worship service we're about to enter, and I pray all these things in Christ's name and for his sake. Amen.